Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into the Take the North podcast, along with Dan Weider of the Chicago Tribune. I'm Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan, on this very, very special holiday edition of Take the North, you and I both at Hallis Hall right now on Halloween.
Both dressed as Bears reporters today. Very convincing costume that you wore here, out here to Hallis Hall. Very windy day as we were standing out at the practice field a little earlier this afternoon. It's a gusty one today, and I've got some trick-or-treating later with the kids, and it's going to be a fight, I think, to find the streets that are downwind.
I did see in the name of Halloween spirit out here at Hallis Hall, as we were in the locker room. I don't know if you noticed this, Dan. You were on the other end of the locker room, I think, part of the time. There was a big Chewbacca mask in the locker room. Maybe you know this, but would you like to guess whose it was? And if you know, you know.
I don't know whose it was. I did notice the mask, and I figured that Jeff Joniak had left it in there from the day before, but apparently it wasn't his. You do know who owns the mask? It was in the locker stall between Cole Kmetz and Mercedes Lewis when I saw it.
Very good. You got a 50-50 chance. Would you like to – now you've narrowed it down.
I'll say Mercedes.
That was Cole Kmetz rocking the Chewbacca mask. And while he was there talking about that, I saw Caleb Williams, so I took the opportunity to say – hey, man, what about you? You going to this? And he's like, no, I don't have time for that. Then I said, okay, what's your typical costume? And he said, I'm a big onesie guy.
Oh, wow.
Onesie, like Ninja Turtles, whatever, some sort of thematic, comfortable Halloween costume. So there's a little bit of spirit out here.
I love that thought. Just so you know, my children today are going as a mermaid princess. Very, very adorable. And Roma Dunze.
Oh, that's awesome.
My son, as Roma Dunze, went on Amazon and bought himself two earrings and a nose ring. And so he's rocking those today for the Roma Dunze costume.
All right, before we get serious here about the Bears, best costume Dan Weiderer has ever worn in his Halloween life?
I'm going to go back to the early 80s. There was a papier-mâché E.T. costume that my mom made. I really liked that one. There was also a Popeye costume in my early days that I was big into Popeye when I was like about 5 or 6 years old. So those would be the choices. How about you?
I was huge into Popeye as well, by the way. My two best are just a good old-fashioned, horribly put together Superman cop, like the ones you get in the little clear top, the plastic and that smell. So a bad Superman costume. And then the other one was a homemade one by me. It was Plunger Man. I put on a shower cap, literally carried around a plunger, and my mom made a little cape for me. So I was Plunger Man for 1 year.
I'll give you one other one from the adult years. We went as almost the entire group from The Wizard of Oz, but we bought youth-sized costumes. So if you saw a man in his late 20s walking around in like a youth medium scarecrow costume, that might have been me.
Okay, fair enough. All right, enough of this fun and frivolity. We've got to get out here.
Real tense out here. Yeah, we got to match the mood.
It is, man. So let's get to our opening drive.
It's time for the opening drive.
Well, Dan, I suppose we can start with, and I know that you had a little bit of information on it in terms of some things that you were tweeting, and we're all wondering and still trying to find out if there are going to be any kind of consequences as it pertains to Tyrique Stevenson for being out of position on the Hail Mary. What do you know, and what is your opinion? What do you think?
Yeah, my sense is that Tyrique Stevenson will not be starting the game Sunday in Arizona, and that would be a consequence. The Bears have not been open or direct in stating what the consequence for the accountability that Tyrique Stevenson was subject to would be. But that seems to be where things are headed. We'll see on Sunday afternoon in Arizona how long that lasts and what it actually means. I think this is a team now that we've reached the latter part of the week is doing a good job of turning the page, but it's a pretty damn heavy page to turn, not just because of the loss that happened on Sunday afternoon in the fashion of that, Mark, but because of the things that happened on Monday and Tuesday, where there was so much outward concern expressed by the most respected and vocal leaders in this locker room about some of the coaching decisions. And so that has added layers to this, as you've experienced here these last couple of days, that have been difficult to sift through. And so I reiterate, it's been a page that's really heavy for the Bears to kind of get their hands beneath and turn it. But so far, I think they're doing a successful job doing it.
Yeah, and I'm going to play some to that end. I've got some great Jalen Johnson audio that you and I were a part of on Monday that I'm going to play. I'll just say really quickly on Tyreek Stevenson, my opinion on consequences has always been, look, if this all of this has been player-led, if those eight captains think that there should be some sort of consequences, then so be it. If all things were equal in this day and age of social media and the pounding and the embarrassment that he has taken and still, you know, when we saw him the other day, still kind of hanging his head low, you know, not really talking to the media. I mean, nobody really asked him the other day because I think we've had him enough recently, but I think he's gone through quite a punishment. But if this is what they do, then this is what they do. Moving on, let's get to Jalen Johnson. And I want to start with, again, a conversation that you and I were in on just a few reporters talking to Jalen Johnson about Matt Eberflus. And essentially, I'll set it up as the confidence that they either have in him or that Jalen Johnson has in Matt Eberflus, right, or that they don't have in Matt Eberflus. So here's Jalen Johnson.
What do you think about the heat that's been on your head coach, Matt Eberflus?
I don't know what heat you're talking about.
Just in terms of critiques of him, you know, second to last play of the game, maybe not calling a timeout for the last play. There has been a lot of people talking about Matt Eberflus and his decisions.
I don't got nothing to do with me, honest. I mean, that's something he got to deal with, and I mean, that comes with it. I mean, I'm sure Tariq got the same criticism. I mean, if you're somebody in this high spotlight situation like that, you're going to be critiqued. So, I mean, I don't think nothing of it.
So 100% support from you guys in the locker room for your head coach.
Yeah, that's our head coach.
We asked him how he retains your guys' belief, and he said to ask you guys. So how does he retain your belief?
How does he retain our belief?
As your head coach, like, how do you stay believing in him going forward?
How do we stay believing in him? I mean, I feel like that's quite honestly part of the job, you would think. I mean, say as long as somebody's your head coach, I mean, the same thing with, in a sense, the quarterback situation when everybody asks, are you behind Justin? He's our quarterback, he's who we're going with. I mean, so at the end of the day, whoever's in that position, whoever is in our locker room, whoever is our coaches are, I mean, that's who we believe in. That's who we trust to lead us to the championship at the end of the day.
It's not the most ringing endorsement, Dan, of the head coach. And now, like, hearing this again and him talking about Justin Fields, because we asked him about Justin Fields so many times, right, it makes me wonder how much he actually supported Justin Fields last year as well. But, I mean, asking about Flus, saying that, you know, it has nothing to do with him, that he's got to deal with that. Saying that he supports him because he's our head coach. I mean, that's an employee, you know, respecting his boss because he has to.
Yeah, we heard the audio there, Mark, but there was also the visual that you and I took in there when you asked him that direct question on his support for Matt Eberflus and the look he gave, and he said, yeah, he's our head coach. It was almost like, read my eyes, not my mouth, you know, and that's the way I walked away from that exchange, being like, okay, I you know, it is what it is. The other part that you just mentioned is essentially what you hear in that last bit of audio from Jalen Johnson is that he is supportive of Matt Eberflus because Matt Eberflus is the occupant of the office that says head coach on the door. You know, not because he says, I love the way he teaches. I love the way he leads. I love the way he picks us up when we're down. It's he has the office that says head coach on the door. And so I'm going to be a pro and believe in him because that's who the organization has hired to hold that role for now. And when he references Justin Fields, I mean, you can read between those lines for 3 hours and understand exactly what Jalen's inferring there. Look, that's one player in a 53-man locker room, 15-man practice squad. You know, you're never going to have universal support, but this is one of your most respected leaders. It's one of your best football players, and his expressions are married up with the things we've heard throughout the week from Cole Kmet and Kevin Byard and DJ Moore and you know, the others that have been very forward in expressing some of their concerns about coaching decisions and methodology. It's worth keeping an eye on. Again, it's week 9. The Bears are 4-3. There's a long way to go, but definitely put this in the worth keeping an eye on file because you didn't hear anything this week that led you to believe that this was a group of players rallying behind their beleaguered head coach.
And what's going to be even more fascinating is to see it, how going forward, starting with the Arizona game, how these captains and these Bears players answer the direct questions that we put forth to them, because it's pretty clear to me that they were told to tone it down a little bit in terms of, you know, you can give answers to the media, but let's not make it, you know, personal. Let's do that behind closed doors. Did you get that same feeling as well, that they didn't like the way someone that Jalen Johnson handled things, that DJ Moore handled things, that even Cole
Kevin Byard,
Byard as well, who we talked to,
I thought Byard probably said it the most directly when he said, you know, you want to keep family business within the family, essentially. And so the last thing that we want, obviously, is to have these players muted and not be able to express some of their concerns. My philosophy in the NFL forever has been, this is a grown-ass man's league, and if you're not strong enough to hear criticism of you publicly, you're probably never going to win a championship. And so I always kind of bristle at the hypersensitivity of coaches, you know, refusing to criticize players, or players feeling apprehensive of saying anything about their coaches. The latter is a little bit more sensitive, because that speaks to job security. But listen, like, if it's right out there on the public stage and everybody knows the mistakes that were made and the mistakes have been addressed and talked about, there should be no harm in talking about it. And the Bears have done a good job this year of talking about it. And I think it's been really, really informative and helpful to the outside world. It's been informative and helpful inside the building for them to find, hit the problems head on. We'll see where it goes from here, because I think you heard almost some pushback from a guy like DJ Moore in terms of saying, like, I said what I said, you know, and maybe I'm not going to say it next time, but I spoke the truth. And I really, and Kevin Byard said to you, I don't regret what I said. I just wish I had kind of phrased it a little differently or done it in a different fashion.
Yeah. And look, these players check us too. You can hear Jalen Johnson. Like, if we're not asking our questions in a way that they can understand,
right,
they're going to call us out. They're going to, and DJ Moore does the same thing, you know, like, make, if you guys ask us honest questions and we really understand what you're asking, we're going to answer those questions. And I guess the other thing too is, Dan, you know, that having eight captains, which I don't think Matt Eberflus has ever done, be careful of what you wish for and what you put together. There's eight captains in that locker room. So if you're not going to give them a voice to do what they want, then don't have eight captains.
There's two other sticks off this branch, in my opinion, and the first one speaks to the reason the players felt like they needed to speak up this week. And I think this is me interpreting this. They didn't feel the head coach owned up to the blunders he made, the handoff to Doug Kramer, the lack of a timeout, the unwillingness to contest the 13-yard pass before the Hail Mary. Those were all things that Matt could have stood up on Sunday evening and Monday and said, guys, I messed that up, you know, and I need to do better at that. And when he didn't, I think you saw a group of players saying, like, we need to say something, because that didn't sit well with us, and we're going to express it in the manner that we are going to express it. We've heard of multiple meetings between Matt and the captains, which is a regular thing here at House Hall. And you say, be careful what you wish for. It's all, this is the second, you know, branch or stick off this branch, is that this is a team that has spoken from the spring about being player led. Right. And players are going to be empowered, and they're going to be the people that kind of take the controls of this. This is what this is right now, you know. And so I don't know how sustainable that leadership structure is when you have a head coach that doesn't seem to have the highest level of confidence and authority of handling crises, right? Like, that's kind of been documented over the last 3 years. But you now have a group of players that feel really, really eager to get their hands on the steering wheel and say, you know, slide over. We got this for now.
Yeah. And I'll end this particular segment before we actually, I got one more Jalen Johnson cut, but I think part of it, the more I've thought about it with Matt Eberflus, is the, you know, the reason that he's not just coming out and admitting, hey, I screwed up, or saying what everybody is imploring him to say, is I do think that he is trying to protect himself to some degree, because I think he took exception to, and I also think Ryan Poles took exception to last year, with Matt having all of the blame fall on Matt Eberflus last year. I remember Matt Eberflus saying, using the word us, it's us, it's not just me. That was protecting himself, and I think maybe he's doing that as well, but perhaps overcompensating a little bit.
Perhaps. And I know we'll hear from Jalen here, but I think his response to something like that would be, welcome to the job. You know, that is what you signed up for. And so welcome to the job. When things are a little bit rough, you are the one that's the overseer, and you're the one that's most accountable. And so that probably leads us into our next little thought from Jalen, which is always very poignant and very forthright.
Yeah, and this is in regards to urgency and, I guess, turning the page. Here's Jalen Johnson.
sort of articulate where you're at this week with this game and understanding what the stakes are.
For
the team and for you individually, just making sure that this thing gets.
We're not at a point to where we can let games like that go. But I mean, it can easily go from. It could have went from 5-2, or right. Could have went to 5-2, and now we're in a position at 4-3, or fighting to stay above 500. So I mean, like I said, nothing really is solidified. Nothing. There's always a sense of urgency. I mean, you can win 3 in a row, you can lose 3 in a row. So I mean, it's never. Every week is different. Every situation is not to be taken lightly. So I mean, just for me, for the team, I mean, every week is a great opportunity to win, and we can't let them slip through our hands.
So what do you need to see these next 4 days and on Sunday for you to feel like you guys have cleared the bar that you set?
Shit, we got
to
win. But I mean, we can do things Monday through Saturday, and it all feels good going to the game. We lose, and quite honestly, it don't mean shit to me. I mean, we're here for wins and losses, not just doing things the right way. I mean, hopefully doing things the right way gets us those wins, but I mean, ultimately, it's about winning and losing.
Dan, that's the biggest truth of the week. I mean, it's simple. They have to win, and if they are to lose, it can't be in some sort of catastrophic fashion this week in Arizona.
And if they lose, the last thing we want to hear is the head coach standing up at a lectern talking about all the positive things they did to fall to 4-4.
Well, I don't think there's anything you can do about that, man. Look, if he was going to change, he would have by now. So whether he's getting bad advice at this point, I think he even said, you know, the other day, I'm gonna continue to be me, be the leader that I am. So I don't think, you know, if it wasn't going to change this week, it's not going to change at all for him. So that's our opening drive. Let us get now to our what to watch and prediction segment. Dan, let's get cooking, baby. What three things to watch by Dan Wiederer?
All right, we'll start this off with an offense that needs to get off to a faster start. I'm going to go through the opening drive of the first 7 games for you for the Bears. 3 and out, field goal, missed field goal, punt, 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out. There's a trend there, and it's a trend of an offense that has not gotten off to a good start, an offense that still only has 10 first quarter points on the season and has not been able to get itself unlocked, now facing an Arizona defense that isn't that good. The Cardinals are 26th in the league against both the pass and the run. They are the worst team in the NFL on third down. You better have an opportunity here to get yourself going. Be the team that scores first for once. We've been talking about this for weeks. It's time now for the Bears offense, Shane Waldron, Caleb Williams, everybody else around them to get off to a quick start.
No doubt about it, and I am looking forward to getting to your second, but I think this is a perfect opportunity right here to hear from Kerry Joseph, because we were both asking Shane Waldron questions today about why the slow starts for Caleb Williams, and to his credit, he was being specific. He was talking about, you know, penalty, the, you know, some poor passes and a bad snap that occurred or exchanged with Caleb Williams. And finally, you and I were out here in the atrium at Hallis Hall, where both of us are right now. And I think finally I got a good answer out of somebody. It's specifically Kerry Joseph, the quarterback's coach, on why the slow starts for the Bears QB1.
Just with some of the rough beginnings, including last week, is he too amped up or is he just inaccurate?
I mean, he's a 22-year-old rookie quarterback playing in the NFL, you know, so you're going to have emotions here and there. But he does a great job of just staying relaxed and just being in the moment. You know, he doesn't change. You know, when he comes out and we do our pre-game throws, he's the same way. And you just have those moments, you know. Everybody's different. You know, everybody has their moments. But the thing I love about him is the way he resets himself. You know, even if he misses a throw here or there, I mean, for him to come back and to play the way he played in the fourth quarter, man, that's nothing but grit and mental toughness.
The play he made to Keenan last time, the move. What was most notable to you about that sequence?
Yeah, I got hit a few times. That was just a great job extending the play. You know, that's the one the DN came off. I think it was Rome. He had in the flat right away, but, the DN kind of had his vision. He made another good athletic move to get around him. And then running, attacking with the ball up, with his eyes up. He has great field vision. And then Keenan being able to slide into the open area. That's just two guys being football players.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Just a certain level of touch on that throw, too.
That's two guys as NFL football players that's making a play. And that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, everybody's good. And at some point, hey, you guys got to go make a play, and that's what they did.
Yeah, and so in quick summary, he's 22 years old. Of course, no matter what Caleb has said, he gets he's going to get a little anxious. He's seeing things that he's never seen before. And Dan, I know that play that you were asking about, you definitely put a star on that one.
Yeah, we talked about that the other day at length because it was so special. And it's evidence of what Caleb can bring to the table in those moments where things are not going as drawn up. Which brings us, Mark, really naturally to our second topic. The thing to watch Sunday that Caleb has never seen before is Buda Baker. You talk to people around the league about what makes this Arizona defense go. Now, they're not a great defense, but the engine of it is Buda Baker. He's a safety that's been in the league since 2017, by the way, drafted when the Cardinals traded up with the Bears in the draft, where the Bears then moved down and took Adam Shaheen. Buda Baker's still in the league making high-level plays, instinctive, versatile. They use him, Jonathan Gannon does, as a little bit of a chess piece that can make things a little bit muddy, particularly for a young quarterback to understand what he's seeing pre-snap. He's such a good football player that does a lot of things well. They're going to have to be aware where he is at all times. And we heard from Shane Waldron today, as well as Thomas Brown, but Shane Waldron talked a little bit about the Buda Baker effect on the Cardinals defense.
Around the league each week, there's a lot of great players on every team, and then there's these unique players like Buda Baker that really set the tone, set the attitude, set the culture for a team and for a defense. And I think the way that he his ability to run and hit and cover, impact the game, run the alleys, going against him multiple times, talk about a fearless player that's always in attack mode. So he's one of those guys that we always have to respect. We need to account for. They obviously use a unique structure with how they're able to move him around. So it's a big part of our game plan and a big part of our week for a guy that we have a ton of respect for.
What else stands out about their defense beyond Buda Baker?
Starting with Buda Baker and then the ability to move around Collins or their different pieces with Wilson, in non-normal alignments, they might be at defensive line alignments, they might be at linebacker alignments, so they can mix and match. I think Coach Rawls, it's a very unique scheme, so it's something we honed in on starting work on Monday, and then have worked all the way through, and it'll be a good challenge to attack.
Should be noted, Buda Baker did have 12 tackles, to your point, Dan, about Buda Baker and how dangerous he is in Arizona, which went on the road last week and beat Miami by a point, 28-27. And you and I were kind of talking about this, too, and I'm glad that Shane Waldron mentioned the way they have the different alignment, the not normal alignments, as he put. He mentioned that a couple of times during the press conference. And while you said it's not a great defense, that is something that a rookie quarterback will have to be reckoned with.
No question. And Caleb will have to be alert. The third thing in this game, Mark, that's worth watching is the Bears defense. Let's take out the final play. Let's take out the final two plays of the loss in Washington and understand that had the game ended with the Bears ahead 15-12 and the defense closing the door in another victory, we've been spending the whole week talking about how the Bears took a team that was averaging 31 points a game and held them to 12, right? They were right there putting together a complete performance, a defense that continues to stiffen in the red zone. The best in the NFL right now at stopping opponents inside the 20. This group is playing at a high level. It's unfortunate that Sunday ended the way it did, but the Bears did still extend their streak to 13 games, holding the opponent to 21 points or fewer. That's going to be put to the test against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals on Sunday. But man, it is really hard to kind of fathom how that game ended on Sunday, because it did mar what was an otherwise really, really impressive performance by a defense that's been turning them out week after week after week.
What this week would have been like had they won that game, it would have been a whole lot of, "Woo, we got away with one there." Tyreek Stevenson may have smiled in the locker room at some point in time, although I'm sure, he still would have been met with the leadership council and all of that. Let's get to our 2-minute drill here on Take the North. I'm going to start with a couple of guys that I know people have been wondering a lot about, and in particular, Ryan Bates, who is just beginning his practice window after being activated from injured reserve. We know how much the Bears like him. We know that Ryan Poles, tried to get him once, and he is on the team now. It definitely has been working out at guard, has not been working out at center, from what I understand. So, the idea of replacing Coleman Shelton, I don't see that happening. I also would be, and this is not exactly going out on a limb, but just from people I was talking to, it would be very surprising if Ryan Bates is active or ready to play by this Sunday in Arizona. And then I also will be very surprised too if Jaquan Brisker is good to go. And he's missed a couple of games, and I know he had the bye week off, but they are being understandably, I have no critique for this, but understandably very cautious with Jaquan Brisker at this moment because of the concussion, and I'm getting the feeling that they are gearing him up for the gauntlet, as we keep calling it, when the division begins. You know, this week in Arizona, then New England at home. Maybe he's back for New England, but at this moment, I'm calling it pretty doubtful for this week in Arizona.
Spoke to Brisker for about 45 seconds in the locker room on Wednesday. Seems like he's improving and moving in the right direction, but delicate situation that the Bears are trying to keep their arms around and be very cautious with as they bring him back. As it relates to Ryan Bates and the rest of the offensive line, as you look at your injury report from Thursday's practice, Karan Amagaji still out with the calf injury, unlikely to play this week. Tevin Jenkins out today with the knee issue. Braxton Jones out today with the knee issue. So your left side of your offensive line is in flux, and you're going to have to find answers there. Larry Borum, name has come up a lot this week. Larry Borum, eligible to be activated back to the 53-man roster. I would expect that to happen before the Bears arrive at State Farm Stadium on Sunday. Is he ready to start? Shane Waldron certainly seemed to believe that Larry Borum was in the mental and physical state to get a start. Now, is that a tackle? Is it a guard? How do you put all those pieces together? That's what the Bears have the next 72 hours to kind of get their arms around.
Yeah, and it was funny. I had a quick conversation on the record with Larry Borum today, and you know, I asked, you know, do you think you're going to be active? Because he was inactive last week, as you indicated, and he said, oh, yeah, I'll be active. And as far as where he's been playing, he was a little bit ambiguous about it. It sounded like, you know, ideally he's your swing tackle, but he certainly did not rule out the possibility of inside. He's barely practiced this year, so it was kind of difficult to actually get that information out of him as to where he would be most valuable. But it's huge that he's healthy at this point. And same with, you know, and I talked to Ryan Bates as well, and, you know, we'll see. But he made it very clear he's just in the very beginning process of all of this right now.
Montez Sweat back on the practice field on Thursday, still limited with a shin issue. We'll see where he is by the end of the week. You'd imagine that he would do everything he could to get back out on the field. That's an important one as well for a defense that doesn't want to be super shorthanded going to play what can be a dangerous Cardinals offense. Like, don't overlook how good Kyler Murray can be when he's on. And if you're down Brisker, you're down Gordon, and you're down Sweat, well, now you're really swimming upstream.
And that brings us to our predictions here on the Bears at Arizona. Weedsy, where are you going, my man?
I'm struggling with this, to be quite honest with you, because last week I told you I was kind of going against personal principle, which is show me that you can win on the road. Show me you can win a big stage game. Show me you can be the team before I believe in you. But I picked the Bears last week because I had faith that they would pull that game out. Looked great with 6 seconds to go. Didn't look so good when the final tick came off the clock. So this week I'm struggling with this pick, but I think they're going to step in it. I've got the Cardinals winning here 23-20 in a close one. It's just a worry, right? It's one of those fool me once, shame on you, fool me once, shame on me. And so I'm going to put this one out there until the Bears prove that they're capable of handling this. Now, to their credit, last year, those devastating losses to the Broncos, the Lions, and the Browns, they came back the following week and won. So maybe they have it in them. But right now I'm leaning Cardinals 23, Bears 20.
It's not difficult for me. I am picking Arizona to win this game as well. I've got it 24-21. Kyler Murray scares me. I mean, like, I just – watching what Jaden Daniels was able to do in that game, and I know the Bears' defense did not break, but, you know, running at 6.1 yards per clip, 53 yards rushing, and Kyler Murray's done a number on the Bears in the past, and I know these guys aren't, you know, people that were on that team, but I think Kyler Murray, who was 26 of 36, 307 yards and two TDs, zero picks, he's protected the ball very well this year so far. I'm afraid he's going to do a number on this Bears defense, as good as the Bears defense is. That's what I'm predicting.
Yeah, well, that's two votes for the Cardinals. Let's see if Adam Stasinski can give us any better outlook for our.
Let's give us a Bears pick, will you?
Oh, all right. I'll be the one to do it. I'm going to pick the Bears. I'm going on. There's a lot of. I guess you could say there's a lot of blind faith for me. There usually is. And I do think like to actually like look at it, I don't think the Cardinals defense is any good. And I know that. So I think that the Bears should be able to move the ball a little bit, and the defense will do just enough to limit the Cardinals offense. And so I think they get out of there Let's go. I'm going to say 24-21. So I think the reverse of what Grody said. Bears win 24-21. Just for the hell of it, Cairo Santos walk off field goal.
All right, okay. I like it.
Okay. Oh, and just for the hell of it, even though I'm thinking Arizona to win, Tyreek Stevenson will have an interception.
Oh, all right. I like it. Oh, there you go. Bold prediction segment.
Yeah. Guys, fun as always for Dan Weeder of the Chicago Tribune. For our fine producer, Adam Sinzinski, I'm Mark Grody. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. We appreciate you subscribing and liking and commenting. It truly means a lot to us. I'm Mark Grody. We'll talk to you guys later.
Crisis Week is almost over. Great talk. See you out there.
Bears.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.